My name's Roger, and I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. I love that you guys have a moment of silence. Could we have another one? Thank you. You know, Lois used to do that. And somebody asked her what she was doing when she did that. And she said, I'm inviting God to the meeting. I have a sponsor, and I just talked to him. And what he said to me was, you've done the work. Now everything else that I say is up to God. I'm really hoping my ego stays somewhere else for a while, because you guys don't need that. I have a home group. My home group is 7 o'clock, Let's Rock, Thursday night. Al-Anon meeting in La Cañada. 7 o'clock, Let's Rock is from an Elton John song. And you guys know that? And up until COVID, we were the only men's meeting in the world, I'm told, that had a babysitter. Exactly. They couldn't leave the kids home because it wasn't safe. And sometimes the kids said, Dad, aren't we going to our meeting tonight? Dad said, okay, let's go. They want to go. Also, I just found out recently that the men from our meeting started the first parent focus meeting many years ago. And I didn't know that. Those guys have saved me. If I ever start a men's meeting, I'm going to call it Boys to Men. I look up words all the time, and I'm going to mention a few of them, but I thought about it this morning. When I first came to my first meeting, in the format, it says identification of leader. And I thought, that word doesn't even fit. Why would they use that word? And when I looked it up, it comes from the word identical. How are we identical? If you're new, sadly, try to find something you're identical with me at. Every speaker who spoke, I'm identical, I identify with. There's so many things about them, strangely, that I identify with. And funny and not funny. And by the way, I don't know how people can be funny when they share up here. Being honest and funny is so hard for me. So I think, though, it was very smart with the way they set up the speakers, because I fear that at the last, basically, I think they ask me, so when I'm done, you're going to want to go home. All right? What brought me to Al-Anon over 20 years ago was my wife's spending. She had gotten sober on our daughter's 17th birthday, and our daughter's in her 40s now. And she was playing with her food at the table with the water ski people, and there's a lot of drinking with those people. And she was kind of busted, and she said to me, I need help. And she went to detox and rehab. And my viewpoint was, fix her and bring her home. Obviously, she's the problem. I finally found out what was wrong with my marriage. So she's in rehab, and they tell me to go to this night, on Tuesday night, family night, and I go there, and they tell me I have a problem. I'm the one who works 60 hours a week. We have a nice house, nice cars. I had a Porsche. How can you have a problem when you have a Porsche? So you know I'm a deep thinker, because that really is what I thought. Fix her and bring her home, is what I thought. And I'm working hard. The kids are at home. It's crazy. And the next week, I go to the meeting with the kids, and it's L.A. traffic. We were late. Besides, she's the problem. I turned around and went home. She started going to a meeting in our town at an Al-Anon club that's been there since the 40s. Hardcore place. She started dressing like a biker girl. She wore boots and the leather jacket, and took her 2 hours to get ready to go to the meeting. And she had Harley stickers in her car. You know, I didn't get all this. And she did great. She was the only one in her little group that didn't go out. I didn't notice any of this. I was working hard. And I thought part of her therapy was hearing from me on a regular and frequent basis how she had screwed up our family and screwed up our life. And there was I was telling her that in the hallway, and she looked at me and said, "I'm not letting you affect my serenity," and turned and walked away. Now, I almost spontaneously combusted. 99% of me was, nuclear, that she had just put her serenity in front of my insanity. We call that detachment, but I didn't know that at that time. 1% of me wanted what she had. I didn't know what it was, but she had just done something I didn't know how to do. This went on for a few more years. And one day, I came home and she wasn't there, and there was a big stack of paperwork where we leave little notes like dogs are fed, and it was how in debt we were. And she moved in with her brother, who's now like 40-something years sober. And at the exact same time this happened, my dad was melting down. He was raised in an alcoholic home. My grandfather, his dad, was a mean, mean alcoholic. Uninvited from all the family, all their friends' functions at the holidays, he wasn't allowed to come because he was so mean. He raised my dad. My dad raised me. My grandfather was a gnarly alcoholic. I remember I was the only one he loved, by the way, outwardly. And I remember walking down the hallway, and there was a weird little cupboard in their house. And he reached up, and he pulled out a bottle. Now, I am an Al-Anon. It was Wild Turkey he pulled out. And he unscrewed the top and took a slug and said, "Don't tell your grandmother." He had never talked to me that way before about anything except that day. And hold on, senior moment here. My dad, I don't know what was happening with him. We were estranged. I just couldn't be with him anymore or talk to him at all. And he started to melt down, and I don't know what had happened. I think he was having little strokes or something, but he wound up in the hospital, nursing home, hospital. I have one sister who lives up north, so I'm in charge. And I'm working 60 hours a week. My wife's living with her brother. The kids are kind of gone by now. They're living their own life. I'm going back and forth from the hospital to the nursing home to his house, and he's a hoarder. I didn't know that. And it's trails of treasures, mostly trash, but some treasures. And so I'm going through all this. I'm just in an electric fog of just doing. And I pulled into a gas station to get my truck filled up, and my card was denied. And I think this was my bottom. I didn't have the money to pay my credit card bill. Yet I'm working 60 hours a week. I have a great business, and I make pretty good money. I'm out of money. My accountant couldn't pay the bill. And I just sat in my truck and cried. I had no idea how my life had gotten to this place. None. And during this time, I see clients on a one-to-one basis, and I'm not a shrink. She recognized I was a disaster, and she gave me some Al-Anon CDs to listen to. Now, for a long time, still am a big audiobook listener. So this was easy. I just listened to these CDs while I drove and cleaned up my dad's house and did all this stuff. And in every one of these CDs, the person was worse than me at the beginning, And at the end, they were way better than me. They were well-adjusted, happy, living constructive lives. Miracles. And one of them was Mary Pearl. If you don't know why all these people did that, it's because she's the funniest and the craziest of them. And if you don't know who she is, she's on YouTube, Mary Pearl Al-Anon. Listen to her. The other thing is the fact that she was funny, and nothing was funny to me at this time in my life. I was miserable. So I promised myself when my dad got better, I'd go to Al-Anon. And he didn't get better, he died. He died on June 1st. And I was so desperate. I had the gift of desperation. I went to Al-Anon the next Monday. And I walked into this meeting, and as I remember it, nobody really greeted me. Hold on. Robbie told me how to do this. And nobody greeted me, but I think the reason they didn't greet me is because I was so angry that I had to be one more thing. I have to go to these meetings too. It's your fault I'm going to these meetings. So I had somebody to be mad at least. And so I think they didn't greet me because I was probably pretty scary. And I sat in the corner and I never said a word. I never said I was new. How do you guys know I'm new? You know? How do you know I'm not like an absolute black belt and I'm just from out of town? I'm checking up on you. But you knew. And one lady was there who was friendly to me. And I kind of knew her, and she was bubbly and fun, and she was the main reason I went back the next week. And I went back, and I didn't hear anything. I don't remember anything. But everybody seemed friendly. I don't remember anything I heard. The next week, this is June, and this meeting changes its commitments. And somebody nominates me to do literature. And as I went to say no, a voice inside me, as clear as a bell, said, "Don't say no." Just like that. And I said yes, and they all clapped. I didn't sleep for a couple nights. Because they were going to find out I was a loser. And the next week, some little lady comes up and says, "I knew. What should I get?" I was like, "I don't know, I have this book here, it was Courage to Change." She said, "I'll take it." And I thought, well, I better read this stuff if I'm going to be selling it. So I started, I actually bought it and took it home. And one of the books I took home was Survival to Recovery. I was on every page of that book. And I thought she was the problem. I didn't know. Come on, your grandfather's an alcoholic. Let's get real. You know, it's exactly right. When I married her, I had a ton of baggage. I did not know that. At this point, I'm sitting in the meeting, and everybody's talking about a sponsor. You know, who do these sponsors think they are telling people what to do? I didn't like that. My sponsor told me to do this. It's like, I don't want anybody telling me what to do, but there was one guy who always shared something humble and wise. So I called him because I was pretty sure he'd say no and it would be easy just to hang up and it wouldn't be that bad. And instead he said he'd be honored. And I can tell you nobody's ever said they'd be honored to do anything with me until that day. And I'm sitting in these meetings. And I gotta go now because I've got a damn commitment. And they read the same things at every meeting. Let's mix it up, you know, let's make it a little more interesting. But one night I heard the second step. And all it says is maybe you can believe that God can help you. That I'm not kidding, had never occurred to me to ask God for help. Not one time. And so, years later, while I'm sitting there, I saw step one, and I thought, wow, step one worked me. Never occurred to me that I was powerless. I had nowhere else to go. Years later, somebody asked me, one of my sponsees said, how can I be restored to sanity when my entire family's always been insane? And I thought, that's a good question. So I looked up the word restore. It doesn't mean like in the computer age that you get something back that's on your computer. It doesn't mean that. It means you get something back that is yours because you're a person, because you're a child of God. You can be born sick and be cured. You can be born into slavery and you can be freed. You can be born in an insane family and you can be restored to sanity. And while I was at it, I looked up the word sanity. In those old big dictionaries, it's one sentence, soundness of mind. I didn't know what to do with that. I looked up the word sound. I know, that's how I felt when I looked it up. It's a whole page in those old dictionaries. Sound means well-made, strong, has integrity, has dignity. The word sonar is Latin for sound, where you send a signal down somewhere and information comes back up. I can send a prayer signal down to my heart and then information will come back up. That's where my higher power is. I recently heard I love acronyms. It needs to be simple for me. I need definitions and acronyms. I heard an acronym for faith that I really like. F-A-I-T-H, finding answers in the heart. My heart is always telling me the truth, and I rarely listen, but when I do, it helps me. And step three, all I have to do is decide to listen to my heart and do something courageous. The word courage comes from the word heart, and rather than listen to my head. My head is an interesting place. The only thing that had helped me before I came to Al-Anon was journaling. I journaled from the artist's way, and I journaled religiously every day for like 15 years. I know what's going on in my head. It's a mess. Journaling sorts it out. It's really a great tool. And I had done that. And so when it came time for the fourth step, my sponsor said, we do it out of the big book of AA. We do the five column method. And I said, what do I do? He said, well, just write all this stuff out. I can do that. Well, they tricked me because there's a column in that version. You know what I'm talking about. What was my part? In the book, actually, it says, what was my mistake? One of my mistakes and my resentment of my wife and the money thing was I never looked at the books, not once. How are we doing on those extra house payments? Oh, great. How about the savings account? How's it going? Oh, couldn't be better. Somebody said to me once, who's the crazy one when you're asking an alcoholic questions and believing the answers? Not funny. Me. My dad beat me when I was a kid. I don't remember it. I don't remember almost all of them. A few of them I do. And I didn't know what to do with that. I resented him for that. And I worked, this was the hardest one, and I worked on that. And here's what I came up with. Because I came up with how I felt when it was happening. I wanted to say, and I wish I'd said, Dad, it makes me feel like you don't love me when you do this. That works for me. Just recently, a younger guy in one of the meetings told me that that worked for him when he heard me say that. So maybe it's true, because that is how I felt. When I got done with my fourth step, I told my sponsor I wanted to do my fifth step. We rode around in his truck while he did errands. I had my notebook open. He said, okay, read one. So I read the first one. He went, ha, read another one. It's like, that's it? Okay. I read another one. He went, ah, ha, read another one. So I read another one. And he went, oh, I did something just like that, and he told me something worse. And I read another one. We talked about a few of them, but I'm getting more and more worried because I think he's going to pull over and beat me up like my dad would have done. But he never did. When he got to the end, he said, do you notice any pattern in what you read me? Yeah. I had these defects of character, financial insecurity. I did not know I had low self-esteem. That's why I had a Porsche. I love blame. If you take the me, me, me out of blame, 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 you're left with blah, blah, blah. I also didn't know I had shame. I didn't know I had shame until I heard the acronym should have already mastered everything. Because if I can't do it, you're going to know I'm a failure. And I can't stand that. Denial. I didn't even know any of this stuff. I didn't even notice I was lying to myself and you. When we got back to his house, we got on our knees, we held hands, and we said the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer. And he said, congratulations, you just did steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. One day, 4 steps. I wanted to get an A in Al-Anon. I was on my way. But I had learned that all the misery I had that I blamed other people for, I had done to myself. I did not know that. Didn't want to know that. Seems weird, but it's true. I was so amazed that I had caused all this misery, I took a year off. Not from Al-Anon, but from step work. I didn't do any step work, but what I didn't know was step 6 and 7 were working me. Because I spent a whole year realizing how I had hurt my family and myself. And my friends. There was a bunch of stuff on my 8th step that wasn't in my 4th step. And I called my sponsor and I said, I want to do step 9 now. He said, okay, I want you to call me before you do every one of these amends so you don't do more harm. So I said, I want to do this thing that happened in high school. I had no resentments around it. And he said, well, what happened that day? And I told him. He said, what do you think you want to say? And I said, what I think I wanted to say. And we talked a little bit about that. And I drove out to this guy's house. And he just wanted to play guitars and goof off and remember when. And I said, the thing that happened that day, I did it. And he said, what are you talking about? I said, remember that thing that happened? And he said, oh, yeah. I said, I did that. I didn't know it was wrong. I thought I was doing something that was good, but it was wrong. He said, so? I don't care. It's over. And we did. We hung out and we did all that stuff. And then at the end when I was leaving, I said, I did not know that that thing I did that day has been eating me alive all this time. I didn't notice it, but it was. And I'm really sorry. And he hugged me and said, I love you. I went to my stepmom's house. And I said, I was a jerk at Dad's funeral because, isn't this fun? I said, I'm still mad at him. She said, I know. And she hugged me. And everything was all right. I have a little ranch where I live. In L.A. Actually, I have a running stream in the back of my property in L.A. and we have dogs, and I haven't been good to some of the dogs. For a long time, dogs were supposed to find snakes and raccoons and squirrels and, you know, bad guys coming through the fence. My dogs sleep on my bed now. I'm in step 10. I'm making amends as soon as I can. I hate making amends. It sucks. But if you make them soon, it's okay. One of the girls I work with two girls, and we have a blast at work. But she was being a little standoffish one day, and I said, hey, did I cross the line with you? Did I go a little too far? She went, no, my daughters are driving me crazy, and she came and gave me a big hug. I complimented her, and I complimented myself, because I don't want to carry that around with me, worrying for 2 weeks if I said something over the top, which we all did at the work. I could have done it. In step 11, I looked back on my life and I thought, wow, I'm different. I have the same wife, same job, same car, same kids. Everything's the same except I've changed. And I wanted more of that. And somebody asked me, watch out what you wish for now and on, by the way. Somebody asked me if I would take over a panel at a rehab center. So I went to the rehab center, and there's the alcoholics who are going, oh, what am I, you know, what a waste of time this all is. And the Al-Anon sitting there crying. And I tell my story, and at the end, first night when I left, this big old cop and his little teeny wife who was an alcoholic, and I told him what I'd learned in Al-Anon. I didn't know I'd learned all this stuff, but it's coming out of my mouth and going, wow. And she's crying. She's my wife, and he's me. I love doing this. And I started a bunch of panels. I did that panel for a long time. I got a call from a carload of laughing crazy ladies, and they asked me if I would be on the Southern California World Service Board. And I knew not to say no, so I said yes. And I called my sponsor afterwards, and I said, I'm in over my head this time. He said, which position did you take? And I said, institutions. And he said, don't worry, I did that one, I'll help you. Now, what I didn't know when I called him, I would have whined a lot more if I'd known this, that I was the co-chair of the Southern California Hospital and Institution, AA with Al-Anon Participation Conference. And I didn't know the difference between a conference and a convention. A convention is a little more social. They have dances and bands and stuff. A conference is about information. And at this conference, it's about AA, but it's not about sobriety necessarily. It's about getting Al-Anon into prisons. And at my first meeting, it was at an Alano club down in Long Beach. And Long Beach is a port town, and it's got a gnarly section. And I'm in the gnarly section. And I'm in this meeting with like 30 or 40 people, and they're going around the room, I'm Bill, and I'm the worst alcoholic that's ever lived. And the next guy's, I'm Jim, and I'm way worse than him. And they're going around the room, and nobody's in Al-Anon. And they get to me, and I was tempted. The normal me would have gone, I'm Roger, I'm in Al-Anon. Instead, I summoned up the courage, and I went, I'm Al-Anon, like, F you guys. And they all clapped. Now, I didn't know why they clapped. And at the break, four or five of them walked by me and went, hey, man, I go to Al-Anon too. But don't tell these guys. But the reason they clapped is while they were in prison, their wives went to Al-Anon and their kids went to Alateen and kept their families together. And now they're out and they want to give that gift of sobriety to the guys that were in the prison they just got out of. One of the ladies, this is a conference, and her job it was to let people out of prison. And she said, I can spot a BSer a mile away. All I do all day is talk to guys who are trying to get out. And she said, the ones I let out are the ones who said, I don't care if you let me out, because I'm free, because I'm sober. And at the very end, as a side, she said, and by the way, I'm 17 years sober. Wardens were speaking. Here's how you get AA into a prison, because it's hard to get them in. In some prisons, the prison in my town, the warden said, I would die before I let Alan on in my prison. There, it's not a democracy. The warden is the king of the prison. They decide everything. Anyway, at the Al-Anon luncheon, they had to bring in about 60 or 70 chairs as cheap seats for the people who couldn't afford to have the lunch. These are people who were wearing everything they owned. They had just gotten out. They love Al-Anon. It was a miracle hearing these big, scary, awfully scary guys talk about how all they want to do now is take care of their mom and take that panel back in the meeting where their boys are. I haven't mind giving up some of my commitments, but that one I really minded giving up. Every time I went around those people, it was a miracle. I was working step 12, didn't even know it. I was carrying the message. The girls I work with started going to Al-Anon. I said, you guys don't need Al-Anon. They said, yeah, we do. And they went to Al-Anon, they started sharing. I was like, ugh, you guys need Al-Anon. And I was working the steps. And I looked up the word steps. It's in the dictionary. And the definition is something you do in order to get someplace. It's really in there. And I needed to be someplace because my wife had gone to a medical doctor. There should be stupid Doctors Anonymous, by the way. And he said, you're not alcoholic, you're bipolar. Take this bag of drugs and you'll be fine. And that's exactly what he gave her, a bag of drugs. And I don't know how fine she thought she was, but I thought she was a zombie. The best description of her at this time was watching her walk down the hallway to change the temperature on the thermostat. And it took every bit of her concentration to do that. And watching this, I wanted to jump out of my skin and run away. It was so frustrating. I ran into my grand sponsor at a meeting during this time. He said, how you doing, man? I said, terrible. He said, what's going on? And I told him, and I said, what do I do? He said, be a loving husband and keep the focus on yourself. Now, I knew how to keep the focus on myself because I'd worked all the steps, but I did not know how to be a loving husband. I didn't learn that at home. My dad took off and got a new family when I was little. Well, I thought one day, as I was getting ready to go to work, a loving husband would kiss his wife goodbye. And walking down the hallway to kiss her goodbye, I would have rather thrown up on the floor than kiss her goodbye. But I did. I kissed her on the knee. She was still asleep. And when I walked back down the hallway, zombies sleep a lot. And as I was walking back down the hallway, I felt better. And I thought, you know what? That's the Al-Anon declaration. Let it begin with me. If there's going to be love and understanding and compassion in this house, maybe it can come from me first and not them. Maybe in the same week, one of my clients came in. She's been in Al-Anon a long time. I know her really well. She said, how's it going? I said, terrible. She said, what's going on? And I told her, and I said, what do I do? She said, I can tell you what to do. It works every time, and it takes 3 weeks. And I said, what's that? And she said, pray for her on your knees that she gets everything she wants from her higher power for her highest good. I did that a couple of times that day. I did it a few more times the next day. I did it more and more, and maybe 3 or 4 days later, I was doing 1,000 or more times a day. Every time I thought, you ruined my life, which is what I thought at my worst, which was most of the time, that's what I thought. Oh, no, that's not true. Run in the other little room at the office and get on my knees and pray, or just do it right here. And I did it. I did it until I meant it. What she didn't tell me was, it's on page 552 of the AA Big Book, and it says in there, you don't even have to mean it. Just do it. Now, there's a joke that goes along with what was happening in my life now. How many Al-Anons does it take to screw in a light bulb? None. You have to wait for the light bulb to screw itself. I agree, but it's not funny. Because watching somebody you love go down the tube is really hard to do. And at this time, our son got married, and both my kids were like crazy successful. I don't know how they did it. My son makes a lot of money. He put on a huge wedding, 3 bands, in where The Bachelor was, if you watch The Bachelor, at the vineyard. It was in the mountains behind Santa Barbara, really nice place. And my wife missed every wedding-related event. She showed up when the event was over, and they were doing dishes and stuff. And she missed the rehearsal, and she kind of became a joke. Everybody was making fun of her. We were the Fockers at the wedding. And my son said at the rehearsal, Dad, I don't know how to get Mom to show up to the wedding. Now, this is an Al-Anon slip. I said, son, as I pulled out my Superman cape, I said, I'll see to that. And when I left for the wedding, we were on the beach in Santa Barbara. It was about a half-hour drive. She was in the shower. And I thought, she's probably going to miss the wedding. Now, thank God for cell phones, because I got in my car and I called my sponsor. I don't remember what he said. But I called my running buddy, and I told him what was going on. And he said, Roger, you've been in Al-Anon boot camp all this time. Today you're going to war, and you need to take every tool you learned and apply it at the wedding. And I knew how to make amends, and I walked right up to my son, and I said, I told you I could get Mom to show up. I was wrong. I don't think she's going to make it, but let's have a great day anyway. And he went, yeah, and we hugged each other, and it was kind of over. Now, to her credit, she showed up barely on time. It wasn't. At one point, I saw a bunch of people looking at something on the dance floor, like 100 people, and she's breakdancing practically. It's like, oh. Then she's lost in the parking lot looking for something, and we're all trying to find her. So at least she made it. She missed the brunch on the beach the next day. She just never showed up. It was a very strange time. The spending was coming back. And I called the same guy, and so I thought, I had a brilliant idea. I was going to do an intervention. So I called my sponsor and said, I have this great idea. I'm going to do an intervention. And he didn't think that was all that brilliant. But he said, why don't you do some footwork on that? Now, I've been listening to AA and Al-Anon speakers all this time, like 4 or 5 a week or something. And some of the guys I kind of knew, they were kind of famous. They lived in L.A. And I called them up to do an intervention. And I called that little guy who told me about that I was going to war. And I said, I think I'm going to do an intervention, but they're expensive, and I'm out of money. And he said, really? How much are they? And I said, well, I told him. And he went, wow, that's exactly how much it cost me to file for divorce. And I thought, you know what, I'm done. I just can't do this anymore. It was too tiring. So I was getting ready to go to work one day, and she said, why are you dressed up to go to work today? You don't go to work today. And I said, well, since you asked, I'm going to an attorney because I want a divorce. She said, why? That is funny, isn't it? I said, I don't want to live this way anymore. She said, let's work it out. And I said, well, you know what I have in mind. What do you have in mind? She said, I'll go back to AA. I'll go to that program for people who spend, and I want to go see a male therapist with you. Now, the same lady who told me about the prayer had given me the name of a therapist, accidentally, coincidentally, ha-ha, and the post-it was still on my desk. And I said, what's her name? Gave me the name of a guy. You want to go see him? She went, yeah, sure. So we went to see this guy. We drove separate cars. I called my sponsor on the way to every session. And at the first session, on his desk, I saw something that looked familiar. I said, are those Al-Anon directories? He said, yeah, I've been in Al-Anon 35 years. So I called my sponsor on the way home, and I said, this guy's been in Al-Anon 35 years. He said, great, you're in a slip-free zone. I said, what's that? He said, say anything you want and let him correct you. Like, she doesn't go to enough meetings. He said, how many meetings she goes to is none of your business. My sponsor had to finally say, stay the F out of her business. And I don't want to hear that from him again, so I stay the F out of her business. But we did good. What happened was, at those sessions, I heard why drinking and using might have worked for her. She had something happen to her when she was a kid that was, it was criminal. And nothing was ever really done about it. It was just swept under the rug. And the therapist was like, came out of his chair and said, this is huge. What happened to her is huge. And I need to see her alone. And I didn't say, see, you're the crazy one, I'm normal, you know. I didn't say that, because I had compassion for her. I really realized why maybe this had worked for her. I didn't see it as such a big thing. And we did good. She got a job. She made amends to our family, financial amends to our family. She was gone 12 hours a day at this job. They loved her at this place. She was the president's assistant. He'd say something and she'd make it happen. When she retired, like this many people came to her retirement. Everybody was, she's the queen fucker of our family up until this point. And everybody's loving on her and admiring her and saying how much they'll miss her. It was a great day. The president asked all the people that worked there, they'd ever seen her mad. And the only person that raised his hand was one of our grandsons. So she retired. And I sort of retired. This is about 5 years ago. I have my own business. I love my job. I just hate all the BS around my job. And I got rid of that and I kept the best part of my job. And I love it. So I'm minding my own business. She's minding her own business. I'm detached. Now, we've been married a long, long, long time. We were attached, and I'm living my life, and the kids and the family are down for Mother's Day, and she falls down a couple of times. Oh, these shoes, you know. She's slurring her words. She ordered like 5 times more food than we needed. You know, she's in the... at her computer, well, we're all out by the campfire. We have this piece of property, and the kids are riding motorcycles and stuff, and come on out, be with us. I'll be right out. She never came out. And she was getting in little fender benders. I'm minding my own business. And it was getting worse. And my son called. He lives in Northern California. He said, we're coming down to go to Disneyland. And I said, well, you're not staying here. And he said, why? And I said, it's not safe here. I don't know why, but it's just not safe. And my daughter lives in LA, and I said, they're not coming down. She said, why? And I said, it's not safe here. And my daughter said, "Dad, Mom's high." And it was like, it wasn't this, it was... And she was right. That was a Monday, because I know that on Thursday, my daughter had arranged an intervention. This is on Zoom now, it's during COVID. So we're at this intervention, it's the... Everybody's in their own, you know, on Zoom. The interventionist, my wife, my two kids, and me. So the interventionist starts out, and my wife says, "Yeah, well, I have problems." So I kind of started taking these things again. And my son says, "Well, Mom, if you have problems, why don't you do something about it?" That was a good question. My daughter said, "Mom, you either get it together and go back to AA, or I'm done with you." These kids were raised... Somebody was talking about bad fights. Our kids were raised with some horrible fights, horrible stuff going on in our house. When she said it, she meant it. And that woke my wife up, apparently, because she started going back to meetings. Because of COVID, I started going to this meeting every day where there's some AAs and some Al-Anons go together, and I love that meeting. It's really, really good. And I said, "You should come to this meeting. There, people are really nice." And they loved on her, and they helped her. And she became a regular member. She did great for a while. Once again, I didn't notice. I did notice the fender benders were a little worse. Every one of those cost me $1,000 because that was our deductible. Getting sick of that. You know how they say that the disease is in the hallway doing push-ups? That's clever and it's cute and it's true. Because this time when she went out, she went down fast. I call my sponsor all the time. I called him, and I said, "Can I call your wife?" His wife is my wife's sponsor. And I told her what was going on, and I said, "What do I do?" She said, "Take her to the ER." And I took her to the ER, and they said, "She needs rehab." So I took her to one of the rehabs that I actually have a panel going. I didn't realize it until later. And they kicked her out. They called me and they said, "She is way too bad to be in here." So the next day when I got there, I picked her up. She could hardly, it took four people to get her down the steps into my car. This happened in like 3 or 4 days. I called my sponsor's wife on the way home. And I said, "What do I do?" She said, "Come and pick me up. And we'll take her to a different ER." And we did. And they kept her there. They kept her in the hospital. They didn't know what was wrong with her. She was completely out of it. I don't even know if she knew I was there when I was visiting. I visited her every day. Her friends went to visit her. "Well, I went and visited her today, but I don't know if she knows I was there." And about a week and a half later, they called me and they said, "You better bring your family down to say goodbye to her, because we don't know what's wrong with her and we know how to fix her." So I did. The kids came down and we spent the day, you know, and just sitting by her bed. She was, I don't know what she knew, but she did rally and she did get better. And she went to what she calls a rehab, I call it a nursing home, where they had to teach her to walk again. It took her a couple of months. She graduated to a walker. I went and saw her every day. I called my sponsor at this time and I said, "What do I do?" He said, "Act better than you feel." I could do that. I was thinking about leaving her. He said, "Okay, then leave." But here's how it is. You're either 100% in your relationship or 100% out. So if you're out, go. If you're in, you're in 100%. I love her. But I was mad. Just mad. So I called my sponsor's wife on the way home from every visit just to let her know what was happening. And I'd say, "What do I do?" She said, "Be kind." Now, I should have looked kind up. I haven't looked it up yet, but I will. That I can do. I can act better than I feel. I can be kind. I had to do all the stuff at the house, like I don't do that much cleaning because we have somebody that does that, but I mean, I can cook, I can go to the store, I can do laundry, none of that. I was raised by a single mom. That stuff's all easy. I've been doing it all my life anyway. It's not that big a deal. And so everything I'm telling you happened last February. I don't like speaking. I feel really raw because I'm still working on this. It's still hard work. All I know to do is rely on somebody else. Real men cry. Real men get help. I'm not done yet. I looked up the word remove in the dictionary because it's in one of the steps, in step 7. It doesn't mean that it's going to be obliterated and gone forever. That's not what it means. The definition is taken a little further away. My resentments and my fears were right over here. They weren't gone. I didn't lose them in STEM 6 and 7. They were just removed. Well, I went and got them. Because while I'm acting better than I feel, that's all I'm doing. And these resentments and these fears are building up. I'm not talking about 15 years ago and now it's all butterflies and unicorns. I'm talking about 3 months ago or something. This just happened. And I met with my sponsor. And I said, "What's going on?" He said, "You feel entitled. I feel like I deserve to have it better because of everything I've been through." That's how boys are. He's right. And I said, "What do I do?" He said, "Ask God for you to see her the way he sees her." I can do that. Once again, it's compassion. She doesn't want to be a fucker. I know that. She wants to be close to her kids. And they're working on it. I'm really close with my kids. I talk to my daughter at least every day. Talk to my son a fair amount, but he has his own life and his own kids and stuff like that. My daughter's my best friend. I'm going to end with this. Two things. Tradition 5 and Al-Anon tells me it's okay to read AA literature. And on page 90, in step 10 of the AA 12 and 12, it says this. It said it's a spiritual axiom. I forgot what an axiom was, so I looked it up. An axiom, a synonym for the word axiom, is truth. It's a spiritual truth, is what it says. That every time I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, the problem lies within me. That's my one quote from the big book. Oh, not the big book. Yeah, the little smaller big book. Now, it doesn't say occasionally. It's or most of the time. It says every time. Now, when I got bad, and I knew I had caused my own misery and I was miserable, I reread my first step. That's where I found out I caused my own misery. I reread all the stories in the back of the AA big book, hoping for a miracle for her. Somebody said, "Are you going to read the ones on the Al-Anon, how Al-Anon works?" I thought, "Oh my God, I forgot." I read all those, hoping for a miracle from me, for me, and my kids. Dr. Bob's son, who we know was raised in an alcoholic home and went to Al-Anon, in fact, spent a lot of time in Texas, he said it this way: "What's wrong with me that I can't love you?" That is Al-Anon. It's telling me what's wrong with me. And the last thing I'm going to share is this. I've used the word miracles a lot, and so did you. The definition of the word miracle is this: an event that proves the existence of God. That is Al-Anon. That's AA. That's Alateen. That's Olive Program. That's Fellowship. And that is this conference. I've had the best time. Thank you for having a silent moment before each event. That's huge for me. And thank you for asking me to speak. Thank you.